When Allah prepared the grounds for the birth of the last messenger, it was very dear to Allah. The occasion was very dear to Allah. The messenger of Allah is also known as Habibullah, meaning the beloved of Allah, meaning someone that Allah loves. And when we look at the coming of the Prophet, the arrangement that is made, it has been an elaborate arrangement. And we see that the Prophet now, as he comes into existence and he comes and is given the birth, now we see Allah in the arrangement that he's going to make and the history that I'm going to mention from now onwards, you will see a particular principle being acted out. And that is that in no way, shape, or form does Allah want the Prophet to be obliged to anyone. Allah does not want the Prophet to be obliged and to be obligated to anyone. He doesn't want anyone to have any favor on the Prophet. Allah doesn't want anyone to say later on that I did something for the Prophet, that it was because of me that this happened. Usually this is a situation of many people. Unfortunately, my friends, one of the issues of ikhlas or sincerity is this, that whenever we do something, not to have an ulterior motive behind it. Not to have an ulterior motive behind it. Now usually what happens, you see some people are do-gooders. They help out everyone. They are always there trying to help out people, trying to help out everyone and all these type of things. But then what happens is this, that when the time comes, if one of them, for example, becomes a great person or becomes a star or superstar or something like that, then this person who's a do-gooder will have the chance to say, hey, it was because of me that this happened. You know, I gave this for him. If it wasn't for the 2 years that I used to treat him, he wouldn't be like this. You see, they take the credit for it. They take credit for it. Usually happens. And that's where our sincerity becomes useless. Our actions become useless. Right? Yeah, sincerity is not there. My friends, sincerity doesn't mean that you do the action, as you do the action, you're sincere. Sincerity means that even after you have done the action, you remain sincere to it until you die. You remain sincere to it until you die. So yes, I did something good, but then I have a chance to spoil it. You know, I helped a brother, for example, and then I tell him, 10 years later, remember, I helped you, so you owe me. If you remind him, it means that that good deed is finished, it's over, it was never sincere. It was never sincere, you destroyed it. My friends, this is, you know, for example, if you remember, a very great companion of the Prophet by the name of Bilal. Who was Bilal? Muazzin. What? Muazzin. What does Muazzin mean? I don't think the kids understand what Muazzin means. The one who used to call the prayer for the Prophet at his masjid was Bilal. Bilal was the one who used to go up on the masjid and recite the azan every time. He used to call the people for prayer. He was known as the prayer caller of the Prophet. Bilal, right? Now, Bilal used to be a slave. He used to be a slave. He became Muslim while he was a slave. Now tell me, who freed him? Who was it? Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr freed Bilal. Right? Gave the money and he freed him. Now tell me, after all the years that has passed, Now a time came when Abu Bakr became the Khalifa, took over the rules, the reign of Khilafat, he had in his hand, and then Bilal refused to give the azan. He refused to give the azan, he says, I will not give the azan. So when Abu Bakr saw that, he came to Bilal and he said, why aren't you giving the azan? He said, I don't agree with you becoming the ruler. Why not? Because the Prophet made Ali the ruler. I saw it. Can't say no to me. I saw it right there in front of my eyes, you know. He was made the Khalifa, the ruler. So now what? So now Abu Bakr said, listen, remember, I am the one who freed you. I'm the one who freed you. I gave you freedom. I bought you out of slavery. Remember that. So one, you know, when he told that to Bilal, and Bilal heard him, and it was true. He wasn't lying. He was saying the truth, that he did actually free him from slavery. So Bilal just looked at him and said, listen, if you did that for Allah, then go and ask Allah for your reward. If you did it for me, I didn't ask you to do it. I didn't ask you to do it. So my friends, a lot of times sincere our actions are destroyed, not because we are insincere at the time we do it, because we turn insincere after we do it. And now Allah doesn't want anyone to even claim that they have done something for the Prophet. This is how the Prophet was raised. Now my friends, let's go through that history keeping this principle in mind. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The Prophet of Allah, you see that his parents died early. His father died before he was born, and his mother died while he was 5 years old. So at a very young age, Allah took his parents away from him. Now Allah did that in order that, again, the Prophet doesn't have anyone that he owes. You know that, for example, parents, their position is such that a child of those parents is truly indebted to them. He is obliged to them. No one can escape the obligation that parents have on their children. What your parents have done for you can never be replaced, can never be undone. What your mom and dad have done for you can never be paid off. My friends, this is a huge obligation that a person has. His shoulders are bowed down. That's why Allah says in the Quran, when you don't agree with your parents, if you don't like what they say, don't even say uff. In other words, don't even make a face towards them. Don't make a face to them. Don't even let them know that you're upset. You don't have the right to do that. You have no right to make a face when your parents are upset at you, or if they say something that you don't like. This is how far Allah goes to make sure that you know their obligation. So now, if that is the obligation that parents have on us, then imagine if the Prophet had parents who were alive. His shoulders would be bowed down towards them. So Allah did not want the Prophet to be obliged to anyone, even his own parents. That's why Allah took his parents at his early life, raised them up. And then after that, you will see everyone who took care of the Prophet, who looked after the Prophet, who apparently helped the Prophet, did they actually help the Prophet, or did the Prophet help them? Let us look at that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. My friends, the mother of the Prophet, Amina. the caretaker of the Prophet Halima, whose story is going to come, all of them have witnessed and have said many times that whenever, as a child, you know, a child who is an infant, those who have children would know this, and everyone else knows this, a child who is an infant does not know how to take care of himself, does he? He needs someone to feed him. He needs someone to clean him. He needs someone to clothe him. Is there any doubt in that? No, right? My friends, Amina, the mother, and Halima, the nurse of the Prophet, have said that every time we wanted to feed the Prophet, he was already fed. Every time we wanted to clothe the Prophet, he was already clothed. Every time we wanted to clean the Prophet, he was already cleaned. Never once did Amina clean the Prophet. Never once did Halima clean the Prophet. Never once did Amina ever put on clothes of the Prophet. Never once did Halima put on clothes of the Prophet. Every time the Prophet needed something, Allah was taking care of it through other means, but not through human beings. Can you imagine that? Every time they have said it. And who's Halima? Prophet lived with her for the first 5 years of his life. She is saying, I never bathed the Prophet. So what? He was without a bath for 5 years? No. They said that every time we used to see him, he was clean. Every time we used to see him, he was combed. Every time we used to see him, his face was washed. Every time that we used to see him, he was ready. There was no time that we ever saw that he is spoiled, that he is dirty, that in any way that you see some sort of him being unprepared. Now who's doing this? Allah is getting all the things that the Prophet needs done through angels, who are taking care of the Prophet as he grows up. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, the Prophet, you see, the mother of the Prophet, Amina, did not have milk of her own. She did not produce milk. And so the Prophet was fed by two women in his life. The two women who have fed the Prophet. The first one to feed the Prophet was the servant of Abdul Uzza. Abdul Uzza, in other words, his name was Abu Lahab. Abu Lahab's servant by the name of Thuwaiba. Thuwaiba was the first person to have fed the Prophet. And it is through her feeding, the first 7 days that the Prophet lived with Amina, you see that Abu Lahab's servant, Suwaiba, was the one who fed the Prophet. And Abu Lahab was so pleased, was so happy that she fed the Prophet, that the Prophet took her milk, that he freed her. He gave her freedom. He says, you are not a slave anymore, you are free to go. So imagine that. Abu Lahab was very happy. Because you see, Abu Lahab, when the Prophet was born, this is the Prophet's uncle now, right? His father's brother, Abu Lahab. He loved the Prophet. Now, obviously, afterwards, we know that he's going to go to hell. Right? That he's going to go to hell. And so, what happens is this, right? He is in hell, because Allah Himself says that in the Quran regarding Abu Lahab, and He curses him for his animosity that he has to the Prophet. But that animosity came much later. Right now, he loved the Prophet. In fact, he was so happy because the Prophet, one, is an orphan, so all the uncles took special care of him. They had a special attachment to the Prophet. And Abu Lahab also had a special attachment to the Prophet. Now his animosity came as a reason of his wife also, because his wife was from the children of Umayyah. She belonged to the family of Umayyah. Based on that, you see that he also, instead of being with his brothers, he spent most of his time with his in-laws, and he stayed there, and that's where he was influenced to have a hatred for the Prophet and anything that has to do with Bani Hashim. So this is one of the reasons. But then what happened, just to let you know, how big is this? Abu Lahab, he was happy, and he released, let go of Fuwaybah for feeding the Prophet. For 1 week, he let her go, freedom. It is said that someone saw him, and they asked him, where are you? In the dream. Someone saw him in their dream after he died. He said, where are you? He said, I'm in the hellfire. Now, obviously, it's not a happy place. He said, I'm in the hellfire. He said, how is it over there? He said, I can't bear it. But here's the thing. Once a week, I'm taken out of the fire. Once a week, I'm taken out of the fire, and water is thrown on my arms so that I may drink it. I find that relief at that one day of the week. I find relief because they take me out of the fire and give me water to drink. And they tell me, this one day of relief that you're getting every week in hell is for freeing the one who has fed Muhammad. Someone who goes even to the extent of supporting the Prophet to that extent, you see, hellfire at that moment becomes haram on you. This is the existence of the Prophet. Salawats. Now the second story is regarding the second woman to have fed the Prophet was Halima Sa'diyah. Now Halima Sa'diyah plays a huge role in the life of the Prophet and in many of the things that we learn about the early history of the Prophet. Those teachings and those narrations comes from Halima. Now let me give you a pretense of the story and then inshallah we'll go into it. The Meccans had a custom in those days. And the custom was that the children of the wealthy, the children of those who are well-to-do, used to send off their children when they're born, when they're infants, to outside the city, to villages that are outside the city. This custom that was made, and this was done by wealthy people, because they had the money to hire people who would look after them. They would hire people in order to raise their children outside the city. There were two reasons for it. One reason that they had is because of the fact that they came to understand that the pollution in cities is a lot more than in villages outside of cities. The diseases, germs that spread around diseases, bacteria that spreads around diseases is a lot more in city places, in urban areas than in rural areas where there's a lot more fresh air and there's a lot less diseases going around. So this was one of the reasons so that they can raise their children healthier. They can raise their children to be without diseases or without problems. That's one of the reasons why they used to send their children outside of Mecca. The second reason they used to send their children outside of Mecca is because the Arabs, especially Meccans, were very particular regarding their language. They wanted to keep their language as eloquent as they can, and they wanted to keep it in the best way possible. Now you know and you understand, those people who understand sociology, you see what goes on in society, you see that language that's spoken in cities, which obviously is mixed with many people who are not speakers of that language, who are not natives to that language, who when they come to that city, they also interfere in the language, and the people who speak that language in the city, they will adapt to the other people who are living there, and their language also becomes corrupted. Language also becomes corrupted. If you want to go and see, for example, if you go in this city, you will see many dialects spoken, many people speaking in all kinds of slang. But when you go outside the city into more of a rural area, you see people speaking in more of an orthodox way. This was obviously in those days. Makkah, being a very metropolitan area, used to have so many people who used to come there from around the world, from Syria and from Yemen and from many other places. Caravans of trade used to come there. People used to come and live there and interact with the Meccans. And these people, when they spoke to the Meccans, Meccans had to speak to them. And in order to speak to them, they had to adapt to how they understood things. And eventually their language was corrupted. So when their language was corrupted, this is why and how they wanted to prevent their children from being raised in an environment where their Arabic loses its eloquence, and hence they would send their children to rural areas where the Arabic that was spoken was clean and without any interference from others. Two reasons why people used to send their children outside in order that they are raised in those places. One is for their health, and two is to safeguard their tongue and their speech. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, two other reasons came about that year in Makkah. Understand, that year there was a spread of a disease in Makkah. There was a spread of a disease in Makkah, which was Vibrio cholera. It's a digestive disease, and it was spreading amongst children. So because of that, many more people wanted to send their children outside of Makkah so they don't catch that disease. So that was one reason. And another reason that happened was that Makkah that year was thriving. It was thriving that year. People had money. Trade was good. That year, everything went up. Economy was booming in Makkah. People had money to spend left and right. That year the Prophet was born. I told you that it was a prosperous year for Makkah. But the region outside of Makkah, you see, was not that lucky. They were in difficulties. Economy was down. People didn't have money, they didn't have jobs, their business were suffering. And so a lot more people came from outside of Makkah to look for work within Makkah. So with that in mind, you see, now when the Prophet was 7 days old, I told you that Abdul Muttalib kept the Prophet in hiding for 7 days. When he was 7 days old, his aqiqah was done by Abdul Muttalib. And at that aqiqah, his name was announced. That name that was given to Abdul Muttalib and Amina through a vision that both of them saw was Muhammad. Let's hear a lot of salawats. So after 7 days of the Prophet, when his aqiqah was done, the next day Abdul Muttalib sends his servants outside to go and look for a maid, a nurse, who would feed the Prophet and take care of him. He sent out his servants. Now, it was late and they were waiting for the aqiqah. All the nurses who came, they're all rented out. Meaning they all took children. Everyone would take one child. Not more than one child, because they only have enough amount of milk to feed. So they would only take one child and they'll take that child away. Now, let me explain to you how the market worked. And this I'm explaining to you in the words of Halima Sadia. From now, I'll mention this narration that Halima has mentioned as to how she came to Makkah and what happened and why she chose the Prophet. Send a loud salawat. Now, Halima says that that year that she came and got the Prophet to milk, to breastfeed, to feed, right? When she came here, she said that that year was a difficult year. She and her husband had ran out of everything. They had no income. They were down to their last morsel of food. They didn't have anything to eat. it was difficult times. We had difficult times in those days. So we decided that this is the only chance right now for us to go and get it. Even though we did not decide that we are going to go and get a child. For many reasons, we did not have a child. The reason we didn't want a child is because one, I already had a young child. I already had a young child. A young child that I was breastfeeding. And the other thing is that one of my breasts did not work. It didn't. And hence I only had one. So how can I feed another child? But we said there is no other way for an income. We don't have any other choice. So we decided to come and get a child. Now as we came there, she says that we were riding on a mule. An old and disabled mule who was limping. And the other caravan were riding on camels and horses. And they were going faster. But then what happened is that because my mule was slow, everyone was slowed down. Because we are one caravan and we are going as neighbors and people who know each other, so obviously no one wanted to leave me behind. And because of that consideration, they kept slow because of me. My mule was going slow. It was disabled. It was like this. And then we only had one camel left who was giving milk. And that too, the milk was so short that the camel would give, it would hardly feed us or the children. Now we were thinking, how can we look after ourselves, or how can we take a new child to come to our house and take care of him when we don't even have the money or the wealth or the animals to feed us? My friends, in those conditions, she says, we came to Mecca. As we arrived in Mecca, the encampment is outside of Mecca. We encamped and all the ladies went inside to look for children. There would be a marketplace where they will all go to, and then the people who would want to give their children would come to the marketplace and they would say okay, and they'll interview the woman and then they would give the child over. This is how it works. So now Halima was not able to go there right away. All the other women went there. And as they went there, soon they made their deals and they got their children. Now the idea in the market is always this, that when you want to go to the market and when you want to get a child, you're looking for wealthy parents first. You're looking for parents who are wealthy and parents who really love their children, because if they love their children, if they care for the children, then they will take care of us. Then they'll take care of the nurse and the maid. They'll give her more money. They'll lavish her with more gifts for raising their child. So obviously that would be the idea. Look for parents who love their children and then in wealthy families. So all the women went there and they got that. So now when Halima goes there, she sees that all the people are gone. All the people are gone, right? Now she's inquiring, is there anyone here, anyone here, anyone left? No one is there. No one is there. Now, as she's in the marketplace, no one is there. On the other hand, this is the seventh day, the Aqiqah of the Prophet, the day after that. Now, on the day of the Aqiqah, you see what happened is that Amina has a dream. And in that dream, she hears the name Halima. In that vision that she saw, that she hears the name Halima. And she looks into that. And then she sends word to her father-in-law, Abdul Muttalib, and she says, whenever you want to hire someone, a nurse, please let me know about her. So he's all right with it. So now what happened is that he sends his servants to the market. His servants come looking around and says, Abdul Muttalib wants a nurse. Abdul Muttalib wants a nurse. So Halima hears the name of Abdul Muttalib and says, wow, Abdul Muttalib, he's the chief of Mecca. And he wants a nurse. And so she's like excited at first, but then she realized, wait a minute, if he's the chief and he's wealthy and he's all this, why didn't other women go? Why didn't he choose other women? Why didn't other women go in for this child? Then her friends that were there, she inquired, so what happened? Why didn't people choose this child? You know what they said to her? That changed her mind. They said to her, well, you know, I mean, yes, Abdul Muttalib is the chief of Mecca, but the child he wants to give is a yatim. He's an orphan. He has no father. Halima says, no father. Now what that meant is that when you don't have a father, it is an orphan, you're not going to get that much. You're not going to get lavish gifts. You're not going to get all kinds of things. That's what it meant. So Halima was like, oh, he's an orphan. I don't know what to do. Right? But then she looked around and she saw her condition. She saw that she's in difficulty. She needs someone. So this is better than nothing. So she said, all right, you know what? Let me go and see. So she went with the servants that Abdul Muttalib had sent. She goes and meets Abdul Muttalib. Abdul Muttalib then inquires into her and says, what's your name? She says, my name is Halima. As soon as he hears the name, he is pleased. He says, I like your name. He says something about the name. And then after that, when he says something about the name, then he says, all right, first you need to go and meet my daughter-in-law. And if she approves, then you can take the child. My friends, Halima goes inside. When she reaches the room of Amina, she sees that Amina in the daylight has a light on inside the in her own room. She has a light on. As soon as he gets there, she's like, why do you have the light on in the daytime? Amina says, that's not a light, that is my son. And that's the light that you see coming from him. Halima goes and glimpses at the face of the Prophet. As soon as she glimpses at the face of the Prophet, there is an instant attachment. There is a love. And some sort of an emotion overwhelms her. And she said, she says that even if they give this child to me for free, I will take it. Some sort of attachment came over her. And she says, I will take this child. And so she takes this child. She comes to Abdul Muttalib. And she says, I'm taking this child. Abdul Muttalib says, all right, here's the thing. Abdul Muttalib now gives her an advice. He says that, listen, this child has many enemies. Listen to this careful advice that he gave to Halima, because this will be very useful for her. He says, it's very important that you listen to my advice. He says, listen, when you go out there, there'll be many enemies that she has. And you, Halima, are going to see many wonderful phenomena happening around you. When you see these strange events happening around you, do not look surprised. Do not show your surprise. Keep it within you. Because the enemies are looking for these things. They will come to you and they will hunt him down. Halima understands that. She says, obviously she doesn't understand what he's saying. But she says, all right, if I see something strange, I will not mention it. And so Halima takes the Prophet and she goes. Now obviously because of the time, you know, I'll just mention a few things right now. And then we'll go into his life with Halima. My friends, Halima takes the Prophet and she goes. She comes to the encampment. And everyone there is waiting for her. She's the last one. Everyone is waiting for her to come. And as she comes there, the people see her. Right away they get on their rides and they say, let's go there, let's go. She gets on her mule and they start riding. And what they notice is this, that the mule that was limping on the way here is now striding and running so fast that it's going faster than all the other animals. It went all the faster. They're like looking at that limb and said, what kind of energy shark you gave it? What did you shoot him up with that this mule is going so fast that even the horses are not able to catch up to that mule? And they're like, what is wrong with that? How is that happening? And when they come to their first stop and they start getting the milk from the camel, the same camel that would hardly give any milk because of its old age, now is giving out milk so superfluously that now the whole caravan is being fed by the milk of this camel. It's being shared with the other caravan. Now obviously other people are like looking at that and say, hey listen, we all witnessed that this camel is so old, it's hardly able to give milk. And now, you're kidding me? Look at the milk that is coming out of her. What did you do? And then your mule is riding so fast. What happened? Halima also notices the first time, but then she remembers the advice of Abdul Muttalib. Do not look shocked or surprised, just be normal. Just act normal, don't do anything. That would show to people there's a concern, that there's a abnormal activity happening. So Halima did not say anything. And as they went forward, when they went forward, then she sees that it was time to feed the Prophet. And now she gave the milk from the camel to her son. And she wanted to feed the Prophet from herself. You know that she only had one side of her chest working. And so she gave that to the Prophet. The Prophet refused to drink from it. And she tried to make the Prophet drink from that. He would refuse to drink from it. Prophet is only 7 years old. He would refuse to drink from it. She was like, why? What happened? My friend, again, remember that principle. Allah does not want to oblige the Prophet through anyone. And hence that milk that she had with her belonged to her son. Allah did not want her son's right to go inside the Prophet, or the Prophet to be quenched through the right of someone else. That's why you see Allah did not want the Prophet to drink from that breast. And hence the Prophet moved his face to the other one. She says, but this one doesn't work. And hence he still turned towards that. She gave that breast to him, and as soon as she knows it, she says the milk was flowing from that breast. It was flowing. And she was shocked and surprised. That's what I see. Now my friends, as we go forward, the Prophet in the life of Halima, 5 years he lived with Halima. Just to make it short, and I'll give you the principle tomorrow, just to make it short, he says, my life with the Prophet, 5 years I lived with him. When I came back with him to our house, we owned 20 livestock. 20 pieces of livestock. In 5 years when he left my house, we ended up with 1,030 livestock. In 5 years, that is the growth that happened in my house that I saw because of the Prophet. Allah made the Prophet to give blessings to others, not to take blessings from them. And this is how he's going to be raised. And everyone will know that. As we move forward, I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and the blessing to be on the right path, wisdom to understand His guidance, hasten the reappearance of our Imam, make us His helper when He comes. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.